Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
10 to 6 the time, Friday afternoon. Tom Swarbrick on LBC means normally one thing. The radio equivalent of cracking open that first tin, popping the cork of top-notch storytelling and quaffing deeply from the glass of journalistic integrity. Right now on LBC, time to drink in Simon Marks, American Week.
Tom, let's start with the big news overnight. Israel's decision to press ahead with a fresh military strike on Iran, despite President Biden's preference for Benjamin Netanyahu now to be exercising restraint.
Local media is reporting explosions in the Iranian city of Isfahan. At this location, there is an Iranian nuclear facility. There are also reports of activity at other locations across Iran.
The International Atomic Energy Association confirming there was no damage to Iranian nuclear sites in the city.
The Israelis did inform the U.S. of this in advance. We don't know about all the details, exactly how much fidelity the U.S. had on this, but they were told by the Israelis in advance.
Fox News, ABC and NBC with breaking news coverage there. Fidelity between the United States and the government of Prime Minister Netanyahu is in pretty short supply these days. The U.S. says it was not told about Israel's initial April the 1st strike on the annex of Iran's consulate in Damascus that kicked off the current round of tit for tat. The Iranians say they gave the Americans 72 hours notice about last weekend's drone strikes on Israel that Israeli, American and British fighters then intercepted. The Americans deny receiving information from Iran. But the White House was very much hoping that last weekend's Iranian response would put an end to the spiral of violence and head off the threat of it ratcheting up into a wider war. Here's National Security Council spokesman John Kirby on Monday.
President Biden instructed the United States to defend Israel to the maximum extent possible and defeat that attack, and we did. With the support of our partners, the United States enabled Israel to spectacularly defeat it.
And noting that the Iranians had indicated what they called their defensive operations were now at an end, President Biden told Prime Minister Netanyahu that the Israelis would have no American military support if they chose to launch another retaliatory strike on Iran. The message couldn't have been clearer to Israel. Take last weekend's win, knock it off, and keep the world as marginally safe as possible.
I was flying back from Muscat, Oman, as the missiles were flying. So I was more personally affected by this story than I normally am by stories in the Middle East.
That is John Alterman, one of Washington's most seasoned observers of the Middle East and the complexities of the U.S. relationship with both Israel and Iran. He is the director of the Middle East program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies here. So I went to see him yesterday to see if he could better explain what on earth is going on than I can. First of all, what is the nature of President Biden's relationship with Prime Minister Netanyahu, given the degree to which Israel is dependent on American weaponry and US-made components for its Iron Dome defense system? Why can't Biden just lay down the law with the Israeli leader?
Both of them are extremely practiced politicians who've known each other for 35 years. I think much of their communication is silent. I think they look at each other in completely political ways. I think they look at the political pressure points, pain points. They're looking at how to create political space for the other, how to create political pressure for the other. So I don't think they trade in the you must, I will, all that.
As of yesterday, he put the chances of a full-scale regional war at around 15%, which is not an inconsequential number, and we were speaking before last night's Israeli strike on Isfahan. As for Iran, he says the country is increasingly emboldened and no longer especially cares about whether it can improve its relationship with the United States or not, because the world has changed and Iran now has other options.
The Iranians feel their strategy for the last couple years has actually been working really well. They decided they're not going to chase the United States and try to improve relations there. Instead, they're going to build ties in Asia. They will improve their regional relationships. They'll build up this axis of resistance. And along the way, they picked up a Russia relationship that became much stronger. They didn't expect to become much stronger. And in the lead up, all the diplomats were calling the Iranians and asking for restraint. And the Iranians did what I think the Iranians wanted to do, which is to assert that they are the arbiters of peace and security in the Middle East. And if you want it, you have to go to them.
That kind of sober analysis relies on a concession that America's influence on the world stage might be waning. So it wasn't embraced by any elected lawmakers here, nor by the country's presidential candidates. President Biden says American support for Israel is ironclad. Donald Trump this week didn't have very much to say about the Middle East because his attention has understandably been elsewhere.
USA! USA!
On Monday and throughout the week, his supporters mounted protests outside the New York court where the former president is making history, becoming the first occupant of the Oval Office ever to go on criminal trial. His detractors were there as well.
This trial was orchestrated by the entire Democrat Party.
No man is above the law. Our former embarrassment in chief should be tried for everything that he's responsible for.
In fact, this trial is for the relatively minor charge of falsifying business records. The New York District Attorney accuses the former president of trying to cover up $130,000 in hush money payments that he made to former porn star Stormy Daniels in the dying weeks of the 2016 presidential election. Theoretically, he could be jailed if he's convicted, but very few analysts think a custodial sentence is likely. In practical terms, the trial is basically grounding Trump in New York for the next 6 weeks.
To my son's graduation, that I'm not in Georgia or Florida or North Carolina. It's perfect for the radical left Democrats. That's exactly what they want.
That is largely how we will hear from Trump over the next month and a half in an echoey courthouse corridor. Yesterday, after much back and forth, 7 men and 5 women were selected to be his jurors. Barring last-minute manoeuvring, the trial itself will start on Monday, and the former president is not happy about it.
The whole world is watching this hoax. You got a DA that's out of control. You have a judge that's highly conflicted. The whole thing is a mess.
Back here in Washington, there were more important issues on the agenda. The week saw the spring meetings of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, and much talk about the need for the world to prepare for the moment when it might be possible to rebuild Ukraine. The task is estimated to cost up to $1 trillion. The Ukrainians say the Russians need to pay for it, but even expropriating frozen Russian assets and diverting them to Ukraine is complicated. And all of this presupposes that the war might one day end.
We will not just win the war, but we should win the peace.
Ukraine's Prime Minister Denis Shmyhal arguing that private businesses in the US, and for that matter in the UK, can benefit from getting in on the Rebuilding Act.
Support of United States is not charity. This is absolutely pragmatic idea to support Ukraine and support United States producers.
There was much talk here this week about a big reconstruction conference that will take place in Berlin in June. German diplomat Jean-Pierre Frehley is organizing it and urged Western delegations in Washington this week to get ready for it.
We will have civil society, business representatives, NGOs, gathering with political head of states and governments, because we see that international partnerships on all levels are key here.
Now, in case you thought all that sounds a bit dry, and indeed it did, I discovered this week that Mr. Frehley is not just a German diplomat. He is also a jazz musician, and he has assembled a quartet that includes other members of the German diplomatic corps who last September recorded the Ukrainian Renaissance Suite in a sound studio in Berlin. Seems to me that Ukraine's reconstruction, like jazz, is going to take a fair bit of improvisation and, under current circumstances, a flight of fancy. But at least, Tom, it now has a soundtrack, an audio picture of the spirit that the country might exhibit if and when it is finally rebuilt.
Jazz. Nice.
From Washington, D.C., Simon Marks, American Week.